Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another week at the Damage Report with me, John Iadarola, and Brooke Thomas.
Hi.
How's it going?
It's good. Today is a good day.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm hoping it's a good week. We're going to be spending a lot of time together, but
we are going to be spending a lot of time together for the next 2 weeks.
For the next 2 weeks. If my sore throat develops, though, I might need you to step in.
Well,
the show. So just a heads up for everybody, you might get more
breathing on me all morning. Mm-hmm. I think that if you're out, I'll probably be out as well.
Okay. Well, I'm not. I don't think I'm too contagious.
I just had
right
to get
now,
a cough drop,
but
and now we're both drinking tea.
Mm-hmm. I think the show's doomed. Actually,
I think so.
In our context, it's World War III, basically. Right. But just in our context,
keep Sophie healthy, 2020. Yes. Also, today's her birthday. Happy birthday, Sophie!
Happy birthday, Sophie! I don't know if most people have seen Sophie on screen, but the show would not happen without Sophie. So,
yes.
Sophie, stay healthy. Hey, there's Sophie. You can't see her, but she's
like
there.
The calmest, most resilient, kindest. Hardest working, and she's got
and so
a great
it's awful
dog.
That we've infected her with these terrible diseases
no,
that she's soon
going
to experience. But anyway, look, through the course of this show, we're not only going to get sicker and sicker, we're also going to talk about the situation with Iran and all of the bonkers news that happened over the weekend. Mm-hmm. But we do have other things too. So Julian Castro recently dropped out of the Democratic primary. Who is he backing? We'll have that for you. What happens to the Republican Party after Trump? We've got some idea. And yesterday was also the Golden Globes. Over the past few years, have become really invested in these sorts of award shows. So we're going to talk a little bit about some of the controversy that happened there as well.
I think that's great because you are also really represented at those awards, especially the Golden Globes.
They're like 1917 or something.
No, I'm just like they are very like
the Golden
still
Globes
like
in particular,
white male oriented. Like,
yes,
don't you think so?
Are especially the Golden Globes.
Still
yes.
A white male. I'm not sure.
How sick do you think I am? Okay. These damn identity
the
politics diseases.
Hundreds. Uh-huh. It's like, what's
it's a movie.
Okay.
It got best picture.
If I was describing, like using a movie to say like that's your identity, I would say Star Wars.
Well, there was a ton of white men in 1917 in the movie.
Oh.
Also back then.
All right. So we were on the same page.
Okay, we were. Okay. So anyway, you know what? Let's just jump into it. I don't know if we're delirious or what's going on. I don't know. Anyway, over the weekend, Donald Trump escalated his threats against Iran, sort of tiptoeing into the realm of just threatening war crimes. So let's show you what happened. He started off saying Iran is talking very boldly about targeting certain USA assets as revenge for our ridding the world of their terrorist leader who had just killed an American and badly wounded many others. Not to mention all of the people he'd killed over his lifetime, including recently hundreds of Iranian protesters. He was already, get all of your news from Donald Trump. It's the best source for all this stuff. He was already attacking our embassy and preparing for additional hits in other locations. They have continually implied that and provide no evidence to support it. Iran has been nothing but problems for many years. Let this serve as a warning that if Iran strikes any Americans or American assets, we have targeted 52 Iranian sites. Representing the 52 American hostages taken by Iran many years ago, some at a very high level and important to Iran and the Iranian culture, and those targets and Iran itself will be hit very fast and very hard. The USA wants no more threats, but it certainly has more threats. So there's a lot going on in those tweets. That was the president, and this is how he communicates both to foreign powers, but also to our government. And he's threatening to attack a symbolic number, which it, let's keep it real. If I told you someone has made a threat against a certain number of targets and it's meant to represent something else from history, who makes those sorts of threats?
Right.
Terrorists. That's it.
I know exactly where
that's
you're going
with the bizarre way that people talk about conflict when they're terrorists. That's all.
Also, I think a lot of people took issue with two aspects of this, specifically like that last tweet, like threatening to target culture sites and also what that could mean to civilians. And then also assigning the deaths, the potential deaths of civilians to people who some would consider heroes. These 52 hostages, like, do they want that? Would they want that? Would they have wanted that, like, in their name, in their honor?
Well, I'm sure he consulted with them.
Of the deaths of civilians, and I think that that didn't go over as well as I assume he thought this would have.
Well, I'm just gonna take issue with one thing you said, because you made reference to him talking about cultural sites, and Mike Pompeo, he doesn't understand what you're saying there.
Okay.
The ex-president Trump didn't say he'd go after a cultural site. Read what he said.
Okay, he wanted us to read. So just to be clear, why don't we read it?
So wait, did they read
Hold
it
on.
To him?
I don't know if they did. So let's see. Some at a very high level and important to Iran and the Iranian culture.
Right.
52 sites, some important to Iranian culture. He didn't talk about cultural sites. And then he doubled
he
down
about
after
sites.
That.
Important to Iranian culture.
Yeah, no, he just okay. he talked about bombing cultural sites. And Mike Pompeo is just such a liar and a fool that he would like what I'm sure that I know it was going through his mind at that moment. It was Trump, come on, man, you're really getting us into it. Let me help you dig out of this. He's not talking about cultural sites. And then Trump doubled down on it later on that day. And so look, threatening to attack an arbitrary number, and from sources inside the administration, they're saying there is no list of targets that are currently being considered that adds up to 52. He's just weirdly making up this terroristic threat. But then to say that you're gonna bomb culturally significant places, not places that are important with military or strategic value, he is just going to find the places that they value for their culture and bomb them. That even most terrorists, that's not how they think. Like the Taliban did, you know, they bombed those ancient statues. There are a few people sick enough, monstrous enough, that that's how they go about engaging in military action. And Trump has now added himself to that list. And this bizarre threat, which is not
so
just
weird.
Bizarre, it's also illegal. You can't do that, obviously. We're gonna have the specifics for you a little bit later on. Like, have any of his followers said, you know, that's really weird. That's not how, like, we're supposed to be the beacon of light on the hill. You know, we're just standing up for our values, threatening to bomb temples and things like that. Is that what you were thinking of when you were following Reagan in the 80s? But they don't care. No, I have not seen any prominent Republican say, no, that's a step too far. I'm not gonna fall in there.
I like that you pointed out that he doubled down on it in later tweets, and specifically the tweet where he very clearly says that this tweet is to serve as an official notice to Congress. And that's where we are, because I guess thanks for writing it out. That's where we are.
That's not how notice to Congress works.
No other possible way to get your message out. That's where we are.
Yo, Chuck Schumer, I DM'd you. Stop lying. Like that's our government now.
Yeah.
And so thankfully, some people are speaking out against this. Not Republicans, unfortunately, for the most part. But AOC tweeted, "This is a war crime, threatening to target and kill innocent families, women, and children. Which is what you're doing by targeting cultural sites. Does not make you a tough guy. It does not make you strategic. It makes you a monster." And she's 100% right. He is threatening to kill almost exclusively civilians in those threats. Multiple officials inside of the US government are not on board with this. They're not on board enough to actually identify themselves. Jim Sciutto on CNN said, one of the officials told CNN, "Nothing rallies people like the deliberate destruction of beloved cultural sites, whether ISIS's destruction of religious monuments or the burning of the Louvain Library in World War I. History shows targeting locations giving civilization meaning is not only immoral, but self-defeating. The Persian people hold a deeply influential and beautiful history of poetry, logic, art, and science. Iran's leaders do not live up to that history, but America would be better served by leaders who embrace Persian culture, not threaten to destroy it." And the thing is, like, I'm sure that you saw over the weekend the funeral march for Soleimani, which was a billion people, it looked like. If you wanted to turn the Iranian people against us, if you wanted to stimulate support for military action against the US, if you wanted to stimulate support for terrorist actions against the US, you could not have done a better job than Donald Trump has done. So much so that I can't come up with a reasonable idea of why, but it seems like that is his goal. Like his goal is to inspire terrorist attacks against the US. Because he, like occasionally under George W. Bush, they would do things like they would name campaigns in a way that seemed like this was an attack on Islam itself. He is making it explicitly an attack against Islam.
That's fun for him.
It appears to be.
That's not the first specific attack from him. He at one point banned them.
That's true.
People of the Islamic faith of entering our country.
Yeah.
So, I mean.
Yeah. Okay.
That part of that, which we like to call economic anxiety.
Yeah, exactly.
That is why he's in office now. Mm-hmm. So
there's a lot of people who've been left behind in America that want some library in Iran to be blown up. Uh-huh. That's how they will be caught up to the rest of America. By the way, to give you an idea of how this war is likely to go and the confidence that people in the administration have of what's gonna happen, the chief of staff for the acting Secretary of Defense has stepped down. He's out within days of the launch of this attack. Remember, we don't even have a Secretary of Defense. But now the acting one, his chief of staff is like, peace, I'm out of here. So anyway, we're gonna take a short break. We come back more on this and more.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity, the UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it,
"You must unlearn what you have learned."
And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
Ideally, I think that we all agree that it would be best right now if Iran didn't have nuclear weapons. That's why many people were so thrilled when, after years of diplomacy, the Iran nuclear accords were signed. Well, we're way past that now, but Donald Trump is sticking to the mission saying, "Iran will never have a nuclear weapon," in all caps. Which, that's how you want someone to talk about nukes, in all caps on social media. That's what you want. Remember, Donald Trump, if he wanted to nuke a country right now, he could. If he had a bad day, he could nuke someone if he wanted to. But here's the thing, he says that they're never gonna have one, but he has at multiple points and even recently increased the chance that they will develop nuclear weapons. They took one step closer over the weekend to that, with the Iranian government announcing it would no longer adhere to limits imposed by the 2015 nuclear deal in the wake of national outrage over the US's assassination of Qasem Soleimani. So they're not 100% pulling out of the Iran nuclear accords.
Like we did.
Like we did. And again, like just to be very clear in language, we didn't pull out of it. There was no pulling out of it. We just violated the terms of it. So they're not 100% doing that, but they're not going to adhere to certain limitations that were placed on it. Those limitations were placed specifically to make it impossible for Iran to develop nuclear weapons. So there was a statement put out by the government that said, "The Islamic Republic of Iran will end its final limitations in the nuclear deal, meaning the limitation in the number of centrifuges. Therefore, Iran's nuclear program will have no limitations in production, including enrichment capacity and percentage and number of enriched uranium and research and expansion." And so, if what you wanted was Iran to not develop the fuel necessary to produce nuclear weapons, you got what you wanted in the Iran nuclear accords. And during that time, pre-Trump, our government and international observers confirmed that they were abiding by the terms of that deal. That was not acceptable to neocons that want conflict with Iran, and it wasn't acceptable to Donald Trump for one of whatever nonsensical reasons. So he shredded it, perhaps because it was Obama's deal, perhaps because he wants war with Iran.
Exactly why. It wasn't even like he was saying, which would also be stupid if he was saying this is better than nothing, but it's not the best.
No, he just got rid of it.
But no, he was just like, impossible is not good enough for me simply because I hate anything that has to do with a positive Obama legacy.
Yeah, exactly. And so now, for all we know, I mean, look, this does not guarantee that in 6 months or in a year they'll have a nuclear weapon. We will have to see. But they have now said that they will not be limited in terms of setting up centrifuges, enriching uranium, and that sort of research and development. And so in 2 years or in 5 years, if they all of a sudden have nukes, like, that process started today, effectively, and we got it thanks to Donald Trump. Now, I know that there are some people, political scientists, that believe that more states having nuclear weapons actually makes countries more stable. Look up the work of Kenneth Woods if you'd like a little bit more on that. Perhaps they're even right. But
it sounds really scary, though, right? So.
I don't know. I mean, look, there's some reason to believe it, but in any event, they are moving in that direction. And what's so weird is that Trump supporters really do believe, like on Fox News all throughout the weekend, they were saying the risk of them getting a nuclear weapon was great under Obama, but it has now been cut down. I can't get my mind to follow the bizarre twists and turns of that. And it's to give you an example, really fast, yeah. So Mike Pompeo over the weekend, he had this to say. Frankly, this war kicked off, and then he realized he'd referred to it as a war and said, people talk about the war. This war kicked off when the JCPOA, that is the Iran Nuclear Accords, was entered into. We're trying to correct for what was the Obama administration's appeasement of Iran. Now, try to work through the bizarre Cthulian logic there. Everyone said they were abiding by the terms of the deal, including our military. Now they have said we're going to ramp up our enrichment of uranium. And their takeaway is this conflict was caused by the diplomacy of Obama that was working out. And now we've corrected for it as they begin the process of building nuclear weapons. Like, I know that no Trump supporter is just going to listen to me and then think about it. They're going to get something from, you know, Jesse Waters or whatever, Sean Hannity. And they're going to somehow square the circle there, but it is insane. It is the font of insanity.
Trump supporters believe that Trump can control other countries just because he said so. This is kind of like in the same box for me as when President Trump started saying Mexico was going to pay for the wall. That makes no sense. It makes no sense. It's never going to happen. It's not a possibility. And his supporters believe it. Still.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Or maybe even like now they still believe that he was right to say that.
Yeah.
Like they it's one thing to believe the sense. Promise.
Yeah.
But they're not mad at all about the fact that, of course, Mexico was not paid for it.
Right.
It's nonsense. I mean, look, of all the things that are happening right now between the US and Iran in terms of things that are increasing the threat that people will die, this is a little bit more down the road. I know that we're a little bit more worried about the immediate threat of war, but he is setting up a dangerous situation and also making it materially more difficult that even if Trump is voted out later on this year for a Democrat eventually to come in and to try to resume those nuclear accords. That has been made far more difficult, even today versus last week. It was still going to be difficult, but it is made more difficult today by the actions of Donald Trump. And that's sort of by design. Okay, we're going to take a short break. We come back even more to get to on this topic. So when thinking about this impending conflict with Iran, there's a lot of things that we have to be worried about. One that is fairly unique to it being Donald Trump is fears that this conflict is not just disastrous in a military sense, but also that there could be massive economic conflicts of interest having to do with it. And they come in two different forms. So we're going to jump back to an article from the Daily Beast over the weekend to talk about the lead up to this strike, how that was done, and the potential corruption that it represents. In the 5 days prior to launching a strike that killed Iran's most important military leader, Donald Trump roamed the halls of Mar-a-Lago, they write, his private resort in Florida, and started dropping hints to close associates and clubgoers that something huge was coming. They go on to say, according to three people who've been at the president's Palm Beach Club over the past several days, Trump began telling friends and allies hanging at his perennial vacation getaway that he was working on a quote, big response to the Iranian regime that they would be hearing or reading about soon. He kept saying, you'll see, one of the sources recalled, describing a conversation with Trump days before Thursday's strike. And here's the big issue with that. The first big issue is that he's talking to it with, you know, like rich people that hang out at his club and not telling Congress about it. That's one issue. The other is that Lockheed Martin stock closed 3.6% higher Friday after languishing for the past month. Raytheon stock increased 1.5%. General Dynamics closed about 1% higher, and Northrop Grumman stock jumped 5.5%. Now, those are some of the biggest defense contractors in the entire world, and all of them jumped up in the immediate aftermath of this strike on Thursday night. And we cannot rule out the possibility that wealthy friends of Donald Trump, people who donate to him, people who hang out at his club and pay the super high membership fee, might have had the opportunity to invest in these and other stocks, knowing that something big was about to happen in regards to Iran.
I want to take it back to the warning, the Mar-a-Lago warning. I think that the fact that this is not alarming to anyone, and alarming in the sense that even though this is outrageous, it's normal, because this is our new normal as a country. The idea that a report comes out that says the president was walking through the halls of a hotel, giving people, like talking about an act of war as if he was a director teasing a new season of a popular Netflix show coming out, that is not unbelievable to people, that's just, it's the norm.
Yeah.
I just find that fascinating, that is kind of, in the past few years.
That's the 20th concern.
Where we are. Yeah.
That it's a story, great reporting by Daily Beast, but now it's Monday. Do people care? I don't know. People seem to have moved on. They've got other concerns.
I'm sure people care, but just I think the fact that people don't disbelieve this, that this seems so plausible, is jarring, right? Yeah, a little?
I definitely think so. And if you like, let's say you're a supporter of Donald Trump and a supporter of Fox News and everything they've said over the past 4 days or so about this strike, why it had to happen, how important it was. If you believed all of that, you should be furious that Trump was wandering the halls of some club telling people something big is about to be done in regards to Iran, because that could have been the heads up needed for Soleimani to hide or to leave the region or to be protected in some fashion. If it was so important that he die, it could have been destroyed. His chance to take him out could have been destroyed by talking about this. Imagine if Barack Obama, in the lead up to the strike against Osama bin Laden, if he had been like walking around some like cafe in DC talking about like, oh, he's in our sights, we're gonna get him soon. Like, think about how casual he's talking about something that you believe you take very seriously.
And that's the point, I think. Whether you are in support of this or not, we should all be able to agree that an act of war should be taken a little bit more seriously than what we're seeing right here.
Exactly. And so look, back to the stock thing. I get that of all of the bad things that are done in the run up to war, worrying that people are effectively like gaming the stock market is pretty far down there. But it's Donald Trump, and so we can't write off the possibility that he himself might have done it, let alone would have helped others. I mean, like Northrop Grumman, their stock jumping 5.5%, someone could have made millions of dollars over the course of 24 hours by investing in that. And by the way, I checked a couple of these. This wasn't some momentary blip where they jumped up and came back down. They have now leveled off at a higher level. And for Lockheed Martin in particular, it's higher than it's been for a very long time. Yes, it's been trending up because with Donald Trump as president, the chance that we were gonna have some sort of military action was a lot higher. But it has jumped up again. It is reaching new highs. That is a huge problem.
Right.
But there is one other, and that was raised on Twitter by Representative Ilhan Omar. She said Trump needs to immediately divest from his businesses and comply with the emoluments clause. Iran could threaten Trump hotels worldwide, and he could provoke war over the loss of revenue from skittish guests. His business interests should not be driving military decisions. Now, with virtually any other politician, I would say that's ridiculous. It's conspiracy theorizing. No one would actually care so much about some like hotel revenue that they would change America's foreign policy as a result of it. But do you really believe that Trump wouldn't do that? He's got hotels all over the world. Right. If some terroristic threat was made against it and he lost revenue, you don't think that he would sit and fume over that? That he wouldn't change his plans based on that? It's just another reason that he should have been forced. Not he should have done it, because he was never gonna just do it. He should have been forced to divest 100% from his businesses in the lead up to him becoming president. And this is another thing, another way that we are going to suffer because that was not required.
Yes, we are going to suffer because this man is president.
Yes.
Everything else just kind of falls under that umbrella.
Yes. Okay, we're gonna take a short break. When we come back, okay, we're gonna move away from Iran. We're gonna touch base with what's going on in the Democratic primary and what might happen with the Republican Party after Donald Trump is eventually one way or another out of the picture.
Because 2020 talk, we are, it's just not enough for us.
Uh-huh.
Okay, we need to talk 2024.
Exactly. Okay, that after this. Julian Castro dropped out of the 2020 Democratic primary, and he has already made his endorsement. He is endorsing Elizabeth Warren. He tweeted this: "Today, I'm proud to endorse Elizabeth Warren for president. Elizabeth and I share a vision of America where everyone counts, an America where people, not the wealthy or well-connected, are put first. I'm proud to join her in the fight for big structural change." And he has a video there that you can watch on his Twitter with both himself and the senator talking about their sort of overlap in values and policy.
I think that Julian Castro, I think, moved this race in the right direction at a higher level than anyone else. And I think
certainly that for the, like, the level of how well known he was, I think yes.
Just like what he was willing to talk about and how he spoke first about a lot of issues that affect a lot of marginalized people, and then that pushed other candidates to talk about those issues and come out with their policies. And Elizabeth Warren and Julian Castro both have been kind of like front runners in constantly pushing policies and telling you what they're about. And I think that I am excited to see him still be involved in any way in this election process.
Yeah.
So that's great. And also, there is a lot of backlash online so far about this. And everyone has to stay focused and understand that there are, as far as like, still candidates still in this race. There are a few that don't need to be in this race, right?
You know, Michael Bennett is still in the race.
I know. I just realized
that. What are you doing,
buddy?
Someone should remind him that he's in the race so that he can pull out.
I think that there are more than a few candidates still in this race that could be good for us as a whole.
Yes.
When it comes to who could be president next, there is not just one. And people have got to get over the idea that there's just one candidate that will save us all.
I don't know what you're referring to. I'm kidding.
There are a few sets of like supporters. This is not a hit. But that's what the primary process is about. And we are lucky as a country, especially dealing with what we're dealing with in the office right now, we are lucky that there is more than one candidate that could take us in a much, all of them, and even the bad ones could take us in a better direction. But there there are multiple candidates that could take us in a much better direction and that would be positive for us as a country. And I think that I am supportive of our primary process.
Mm. And we haven't even really gotten into it yet. I mean, we haven't had any primaries or caucuses
yet. Oh my goodness, it's 2020 already.
I know, we're less than a month away from Iowa. Like, it is about to start. I try to always give this disclaimer so that people know I've publicly endorsed Bernie Sanders. But I don't hate Julian Castro for endorsing Elizabeth Warren. They've been very complimentary of each other throughout the race. Is anyone really shocked?
I think you're of sound mind, and I think that
I try to be.
Yeah.
Some sound. So, she responded saying, "Thank you, Julian Castro. You've been a powerful voice for bold progressive change, and I'm honored to have your support. Together, we'll fight to make sure every single family in America has a path to opportunity." And so he has endorsed her very soon after dropping out, and also at a time when she has been sort of on the downswing from her highs of like 2 months ago. And so she certainly could use endorsements leading into these first couple of races. I saw some people, including Nate Silver, saying this is sort of the same thing as AOC endorsing Bernie Sanders right after his heart attack. I don't think it's quite the same in terms of drama.
How so?
That like she endorsed him right when he was at real risk of being like of his candidacy continuing at all.
Right.
Like if he just had a heart attack, people are questioning it. That like he came out of that swinging, but it didn't necessarily have to go that way. And so she took the risk of endorsing him when it wasn't clear that his campaign would even continue. And so
I don't look at it like that. I look at it more of that, like not that she took a risk, but that she used the importance of her endorsement at the right time, specifically for that.
And that's what they're saying. And
that's why I
don't
find
think
them
it's
similar.
Similar, but look, as much as I like Julian Castro, he doesn't have the national stature of AOC right now. So I don't think in terms of the power of an endorsement.
That's a little unfair.
No, I think that he's doing a great job for himself, but AOC is one of the most high profile politicians in the entire country.
Okay.
And this is not a knock against Julian Castro.
It kind of is. It's someone who has, I think.
My endorsement of Bernie also was not the most important thing for him to make clear.
Okay.
Anyway, look, all I'm saying is he was an important part of this race, so we're acknowledging who he endorses. Please try not to go crazy about it. It would have been cool if he endorsed Bernie Sanders, but he didn't do that, and so we're moving on.
Okay. All right.
Okay, so why don't we move to the other side of the aisle? What happens to the Republican Party once Donald Trump is gone? And by gone, I mean he either loses in 2020 or he wins in 2020 and then tries for like 3 or 4 more terms after that, but eventually goes away. I mean, at some point, the McDonald's catches up to you. And so at some point, the GOP is going to need a different nominee. After Trump, what will that be? We have no idea, and polls right now probably don't say anything about the future, but we do have some idea of who Republicans are thinking of. So let's take a look at this poll, which was published by Axios. So which, if any, of the following Republicans would you consider voting for in the 2024 general presidential election? Right now, Mike Pence is at 40%, which has got to be seen as a win for Mike Pence. I mean, I doubt he thought he was that popular. But then in the top four, you have not only Donald Trump Jr. at 29%, but Ivanka Trump at 16%. So two of the children, one of which is not involved in politics, the other is Don Jr. There are two of the top four.
The bar is on the floor, John.
And they have, as rich people, stepped over it. They want Don Jr. to be president.
I don't want him to tweet anymore. I don't want him to write any more books.
Yeah.
I don't.
But like, and so that means a couple of things.
But it makes just as much sense as their father being president now.
I think it makes less. Like for all that I dislike Donald Trump Jr. more than literally anyone on the planet, he had been famous for decades. His name had been weirdly linked to business success for some reason. And they saw him as someone who could come in and run America like a business. Oh, and also he hates all the same people that I hate. I get that Don Jr. has that same thing. He clearly hates those people at least as much as his father does. But in terms of like the business prowess and all of that, and also the uniquely Trumpian characteristics, his ability to lie and have it not matter, to give people bizarre childish nicknames that stick, all of those little things, I have not seen any indication that any of the other Trumps have that.
I wonder so much like how these people are in real life. I think about that all the time. Like how insufferable that must be if this is not an act. Because we don't want to take this home. You know what I mean? Like, I think that like politics are always shaping like the world around me, and I'm always willing to have like a calm conversation with my friends. Not always, but like sometimes.
Yeah.
And we talk at work constantly. But like, I wonder, because it's so angry. I wonder like what he's like just at home, like on chill. If this is this weird, like, you know, calling people weird nicknames, if that is what gets him going. And I'm just fascinated by
I think they're probably different. Like, first of all, I think that Donald Trump is probably as bad in private as he is in public.
This is
who he actually is.
Absolutely.
And he's the worst.
We are accidentally living through his private life. Like, he can't.
Exactly. Even, it's become public. Right? Yes. I think Ivanka, I bet she privately thinks, you know what? I don't actually support any of this stuff. And if I could get into power, and who knows if she even wants it, she doesn't give any real indication that she wants to run for president, that I would be much more reasonable. The thing is that she is supporting in her silence and in the influence she could have over him, she is supporting all of those things. And so, like with how people give Melania a pass when she's a birther and all of that, Ivanka, she has signed on, whether she wants to all of the worst things that Donald Trump has done. Because if she is trying to influence him away from those things, it has not been made apparent to literally anyone. It appears that she is a silent collaborator with all of Donald Trump's worst impulses.
She has been very, very silent throughout a lot of this. Like very, like her who she is and when she hear from us, when we hear from her is more about kind of this popularity that she has and this kind of obsession with her. And so, but then what we have heard from her in the many interviews is a very palatable lie. a very soft, like the way it comes out. I'm not saying
as soft about, as
I say
the
like
questions.
Attractive, I'm not talking about her appearance. I'm talking about like her brother is very angry, right? Mm-hmm. And it's like, ugh, she's it's
yeah, and
very,
he's clearly
like,
a bigot and all
soft
that.
And calm. But then when you break down the words that come out, it's a lie.
Yeah, yeah, so. And also, and when you look at who she's supposed to be, so the idea for her is some Republicans are gonna like her because of the work that she did under Donald Trump, and she has. She's the advisor to the president with a portfolio that includes education and economic empowerment of women and families.
Okay.
Plus job creation and economic growth through workforce development, skills training and entrepreneurship. So like her husband, she's not qualified for the vast majority of those things. But she does have, supposedly, she's advocating for women inside this administration. Which is why we now have this incredibly robust maternity leave policy.
Yeah.
No, what? Maybe she's doing those things. Maybe she's trying to push him for those things, but we haven't got it. If they wanted it, they could have it. The House would obviously vote in favor of something like that. They could twist the arms of Mitch McConnell.
But
they haven't,
like,
so we don't have it.
Great examples of like prioritizing motherhood at the border by
exactly.
separating children from their moms. So it's sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
Again,
and really,
absolutely nothing but soft lies. It's
yeah.
just.
And Don Jr. Is just smart enough to try to mimic some of what his father does. And it comes across to me as sad. He clearly wants his dad to accept him, and his dad doesn't seem to care much about him. It's a really sad performance that, like, I have no doubt that in private, he is as entitled as anyone who was raised with the wealth that he was. And he probably is an incredible bigot as well. But it's even worse that he's then amplifying that with an act. When he goes on the stage, that it's not like his dad. That's not the authentic person that he is. It's an amplification of the worst impulses of the people he finds himself surrounded by. And so to me, he's the worst of the bunch because he's both a bad person and wants you to believe he's a worse person. But anyway, it also shows the complete lack of any seriousness among the Republican electorate that this is what they're looking forward to. Once they're done with Donald Trump, it couldn't be any more a familial dictatorship that they're just like, yeah, whoever the kid is, we'll take them. Anyway, okay, we're gonna take a break. When we come back, we're gonna lighten things up at least a little bit and
kind
talk
of.
A little bit about last night's Golden Globes. In any event, it should be fun. We'll see you after this. Last night was the Golden Globes, and we can't go over everything on the show, but we did want to spotlight a couple of noteworthy moments. And one came when Michelle Williams accepted her award, and she had a pretty good award speech. Let's listen.
And I'm also grateful to have lived at a moment in our society where choice exists, because as women and as girls, things can happen to our bodies that are not our choice. I've tried my very best to live a life of my own making, and not just a series of events that happened to me, but one that I could stand back and look at and recognize my handwriting all over, sometimes messy and scrawling, sometimes careful and precise, but one that I had carved with my own hand. And I wouldn't have been able to do this without employing a woman's right to choose. To choose when to have my children and with whom, when I felt supported and able to balance our lives, knowing, as all mothers know, that the scales must and will tip towards our children. Now, I know my choices might look different than yours, but thank God, or whomever you pray to, that we live in a country founded on the principle that I am free to live by my faith and you are free to live by yours. So, women, 18 to 118, when it is time to vote, please do so in your own self-interest. It's what men have been doing for years.
So I don't actually know much about her career. I haven't seen her in many things,
but
she gave a speech, I think at the Oscars last year, about pay for actresses that was also really well done. Yeah. Like, there's a lot of people that go up there and do their like political message, and it's not like Joaquin Phoenix. I did not love his speech.
He's
been
doing it
was good,
right? It's for a while now.
I don't know. Like, I liked what he was saying, but the way he delivered it was not particularly effective. But her, I think, was very effective. What do you think?
Listen, I liked her speech and I liked what she was going for. I'm curious because I did see a lot of criticism online.
And, of her?
There is a group of women that have overwhelmingly always voted for the Democratic Party, did mm-hmm. so in this last election, will do so again.
Irish women.
And there is another group of women that 53% of which mm-hmm. voted for Donald Trump.
Yes.
And I think a lot of people were hoping that, what I saw online specifically, a lot of people were saying that you have to specifically mm-hmm. call out the women who look like you, mm-hmm. the women who are not the ones
isn't
already.
Isn't that what she was doing?
I think by calling out all women, you group in the group that doesn't need the lesson.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, that's true.
They don't.
I think
they don't need to be told that. They already know that. They yeah. do not need to be told that.
Yes. So I think you're not wrong. But she was saying that they haven't voted in their self-interest. So she is implying the people who voted for Trump. It seems like that's who she's trying to talk to.
So I think that's more why I didn't have a problem with that. I thought it was a strong speech. Mm. I think for me, most important, I like that actresses and actors are willing to talk about this stuff now, are willing to be like, you know what, I don't care what anybody says. I don't care what fans I lose. I care about my country. I care about people. I care about people who aren't as privileged as me, who aren't as lucky as me. I care about them, people who do not have the same opportunities as me. I care about them, and I want to do something about that. And so I like that. I really respect that. But I did see that criticism, and I wonder, because that happens a lot, if you'll notice. Like, celebrities not being very specific about what who they're talking. And I think
I liked, at least in this case, sometimes it feels like a celebrity sort of picked up an issue as like a thing to do.
Yeah.
She clearly seemed, I don't know specifics, but she clearly seemed to be talking about her own experience.
Passionate and she and educated, and like she really truly cares about this.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's nice to see.
Yeah. So why don't we turn to an earlier part of the Golden Globes, which actually warned against this sort of political speech. But anyway, Ricky Gervais was host of the Golden Globes, and he did not pull any punches. It's not his role to pull punches, I guess. There was a section of what he had to say. Let's take a look, and we'll give you our commentary.
Apple roared into the TV game with a morning show, a superb drama, a superb drama about the importance of dignity and doing the right thing, made by a company that runs sweatshops in China. So, well, you say you're woke, but the companies you work for, I mean, unbelievable. Apple, Amazon, Disney. If ISIS started a streaming service, you'd call your agent, wouldn't you? So, if you do win an award tonight, don't use it as a platform to make a political speech, right? You're in no position to lecture the public about anything. You know nothing about the real world. Most of you spent less time in school than Greta Thunberg. So, if you win, right, come up, accept your little award, thank your agent and your God, and
yeah, they had to cut out the audio quite a bit.
Because he was cussing so much.
He was cussing a lot. And he was drinking actively.
Like, leave that little kid. She is a kid. Leave that girl alone.
He's more mocking them, obviously.
You gave us a little chuckle.
Yeah, it was
but,
good.
Oh my God, leave that little kid alone. Also, I get what he's saying, but like, we can't start there. This idea that like everything has to be perfect, and we would like everything to be perfect, but everything is not just gonna like snap and be perfect. That's just not how life works. So I would rather everyone be willing to chip away a little bit as they can, and use the power that they have to talk about one thing.
I found it funny. I liked that he was willing to stand in front of this group of all these people and just give them the middle finger. But they want to have careers and they need to get roles. I mean, what I would like to do is, once they become important to these companies, hopefully they would then use that to try to push them in the right direction.
And maybe they are. It seems like that's why, you know, one by one, little by little.
Yeah. Yeah. And look, I think that often their ability to really influence things, celebrities, is exaggerated anyway. But if they want to try to push people in the right direction, is it better to just have Apple's sweatshops and not have something good? I would rather also have the something good.
And also
good.
Like in that, so like all of us who don't have those horrid green text messages, should you not be able to speak out about something because you have not, you know what I mean? Like,
oh,
where's the line, you know?
I thought you were attacking me. I thought you were attacking Apple.
The beginning of that was,
because
they stressed me out. You mess up the group text and.
Okay, I want to move to one other section, which was pretty good. He had a couple of these. So he said, our next presenter starred in Netflix's Bird Box, a movie where people survive by acting like they don't see a thing, sort of like working for Harvey Weinstein. After the crowd erupted in boos, he said, you did it. I didn't, you did it. He's not wrong. I mean, come on. He also pointed out that a lot of them were friends with Jeffrey Epstein. And all of that is true. Like, the people who did the crimes are obviously the worst people, but the people who knew it and turned a blind eye are not innocent.
That's true. There's also a lot of like power dynamics that come into play when it comes to turning a blind eye.
Or
not even turning a blind eye, but like what is believed, what you're able to do, what, you know.
It is complicated.
That's cheap. He's funny though.
Yeah, he was funny.
He's always funny. That's why they keep bringing him back over and over over. I mean,
even though I'm sure some of the stars would have preferred a change of pace. Look, Sacha Baron Cohen also called out Mark Zuckerberg, who he's been very critical of recently, for spreading Nazi propaganda. I can't read the whole thing, but it was an interesting night.
Yeah.
But I like the willingness to question some of what goes on in Hollywood.
I agree.
Okay, well, thank you for joining us on this Monday and for dealing with my sore throat. I got news for you. We're only gonna get sicker as the week goes on.
I know, now I'm like sniffling. I feel like I'm always sniffling, whatever.
We're gonna drink a lot of tea, a lot of honey. Anyway, thank you
for joining. Thanks for having me.
Always good to have you here. And as I alluded to earlier, I believe on our live video, and if you don't watch the live videos before the show on our YouTube channel, you should definitely do that. Congressman Ro Khanna is gonna be joining us to talk about the impending conflict with Iran on Wednesday. So you're definitely gonna tune in there. We'll see you tomorrow morning.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.